How do you name a city? James Barber was clever. He purchased 5,000 acres around here before the county was formed in 1799 and offered 2 acres for a public square and 36 acres for town lots around that square. Barber benefited 2 ways in this deal. He received half of the profits from the town lot sales. He also gave his name to the county seat, Barberville. And that's how you name a city. How do you name a river? Well, that takes more work. Dr. Thomas Walker and 5 companions explored these mountains in 1750, 25 years before Daniel Boone blazed the Wilderness Road. Walker kept a daily journal of his party's adventure. Let's read from the entry dated April 28, 1750. We kept up the river to our company, whom we found all well, but the lame horse was as bad as we left him, and another had been bit on the nose by a snake. I rubbed the wounds with bear's oil and gave him a drench of decoction of rattlesnake root. The people I had left had built a house 8x12, cleared and broke up some ground and planted corn and peach stones. They also had killed several bears and cured the meat. This day, Colby Chew and his horse fell down the bank. I bled and gave him volatile drops, and he soon recovered. That's rough traveling. On old French maps, the river he mentions was named the River of the Ancient Shawano, or simply the River Shawnee. When Walker arrives in 1750, he names the river the Cumberland River, in honor of the Duke of Cumberland. That's how you name a river. That 8x12 cabin he mentions is memorialized as Kentucky's first home built by a pioneer at the Dr. Thomas Walker State Historic Park. Walker was a 35-year-old physician during his exploration into Kentucky. He had a big heart for his dogs and horses, which were essential to his expedition. During a chase for a buck elk, one of his dogs was killed. Walker couldn't save Tumbler, as his dog was named, but he honored the place where Tumbler fell by naming the area Tumbler's Creek. And that's how you name a creek.
My name is Mark Sohn, and I've been writing about Appalachian food since 1988.
One of the things that you'll see sold here in the mountains is sorghum. And sorghum comes from a plant, a sweet sorghum plant. Sorghum is different from molasses. Molasses and sorghum look a lot alike, and sometimes they're used in the same situations, and they're both sold in a jar. But sorghum comes from the sweet sorghum plant, and molasses is a byproduct of sugar production. And when you buy white sugar in the store, then somebody's getting some molasses off of that. Sorghum, on the other hand, is pressed from the stem of a sorghum cane plant, and that liquid then is evaporated, and most of the water goes away, and what's left is a wonderful sorghum syrup. And we have a few sorghum producers here in the mountains. You will see in the summer, you're going to see sorghum plants, and they look like corn plants. I mean, it's a stalk. It's a green field. And then in the fall, it's going to have a whole bunch of like berries on top. It's like a bunch of grapes, but these berries are only like 1/8 of an inch across. And so then the sorghum is mature, and that's grain sorghum on top of the cane. But then late in the fall, people cut their sorghum, and they'll put it on a trailer, and it'll be stacked, a whole trailer full of sorghum. And that goes to the press, the sorghum press on the farm. So you might see a sorghum press at a museum or a farm where heavy wheels will press out the juice, and the juice then goes into an evaporator pan. These are large pans, 8 or 10 feet across. And eventually it gets real thick and dark, and it's ready to be put in jars and sold as 100% pure sorghum. And we don't want any molasses, and we don't want any corn syrup put into that sorghum. And then we take that sorghum home and bake some biscuits and get some butter and pour that sorghum over the biscuits and butter. That is good, 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 good eating.
The changing seasons offer simple pleasures in the mountains. Have you heard the rhythmic sounds of summer locusts as they bloom in a slow, swirling buzz? K.S. Sol Warren, a Knox County historian and poet, wrote a poem about this pleasure.
This is locust year. What are these strange songs I hear up and down the greening hills? Songs I haven't heard so far in year for 17 years in trees and rills. This is a year of the locust return, 1974. You hear the lonesome call wherever you go, in which they seem to say, "Fare-o." Came millions of locusts here this spring to lay their eggs in every twig and tree, to make May Day songs to make the valley ring, and prepare to exit no more to sea for another 17 years, when they emerge from the earth and shall to have their day. My full name is King Solomon Warren. Mm-hmm. I was born at Walker, Kentucky on Stinking Creek at the mouth of Roan Fork in September 4, 1916. There's all kinds of different stories about Stinking Creek, but when the Longhorners came through this area before it was settled, they did a lot of hunting up in there, and they skinned or dressed their varmints that they had killed. They'd skin them out and just leave the carcass lying, and a couple of days later it'd be smelling. And so they said, "Well, this is Stinking Creek," and say, "I guess it was."
My name is Susan Arthur, and I was born in 1915 on the banks of the Cumberland River in Flat Lick. And we had a small house there. Great-great-great-grandfather came over the gap after the Revolutionary War and built a house at Flat Lick. And he sent goods back to Virginia and North Carolina and sold them, maybe sheep, turkeys or cows or something like that. They were driven across the Cumberland Gap. Turkeys were the worst, they said, to drive because they were all fluttering up in the tree. So you took those and you moved them that direction. Had them over here. Pasture was good. And the land was worn out over in the other sections. So these were fat, nice ones. And they sold well.
Barberville was the site of Kentucky's first Civil War conflict. On September 19, 1861, Confederate troops moved up from Cumberland Gap to attack Camp Andy Johnson, a Union station in Barberville. Many mountaineers were Unionists and came up the Wilderness Road to volunteer. The Confederate generals would have none of this. On a foggy dawn, the Confederates attacked Barberville. 20 hours later, Barberville was in rebel hands. But not for long. Later in the war, General Grant stayed here inspecting the road to Cumberland Gap. I'm sure you're familiar with Civil War reenacting, where level-headed folk dress up in old clothing, often hot and scratchy, and live a weekend on the battlefield. These are popular events for everybody. the event climaxes in a grand battle between the blue and the gray. Ask your tourism host about annual reenactments in the area, such as McNeil's Crossing in September. Also, visit Flat Lick, where you can find the Daniel Boone Memorial Park. It commemorates the pioneer crossroads where the Wilderness Road, Boone's Trace, and the Warrior's Path intersected. The Kentucky frontier saw numerous battles during the Revolutionary War, and Daniel Boone, a Kentucky icon, fought in many. Scott New, a professional living history interpreter, has researched Boone's life during this period and finds he must dispel many Boone stereotypes.
The image of Daniel Boone with a coonskin cap is something we really need to put to rest. It's very interesting. His youngest son, Nathan, said, "My father despised animal skin caps. He always wore a black beaver felt hat." Nathan said that Daniel thought animal skin hats were uncivilized, and he considered himself a proper country gentleman and wouldn't be seen in such attire. And of course, what is a popular image? Coonskin cap, and poor old Daniel must be rolling over in his grave or running off into the woods in the great hereafter, knowing I knew they would do something like that to me after my death. My name is Scott New. I portray Daniel Boone for the Kentucky Humanities Council's Chautauqua program. Boone has been far too long buried in myth and in folklore and old wives' tales. There's a tremendous amount of primary source documentation on Daniel Boone from his companions, his friends, his family, his descendants, that tells us the true story of his life, and sadly enough, much of it has been neglected. Most folks have been fans in the past of the Fess Parker television program. Well, it was a good family program. It did always have a moral in the story. However, historically, it could not have been any further from the truth. And Hollywood has hardly ever been kind to our history.
Daniel Boone was a man, yes, a big man. He was brave, he was fearless, and as tough as a mighty oak tree. From the coonskin cap on the top of old Dan to the heel of his rawhide shoe, the rippin'est, roarin'est, fightin'est man the frontier ever knew.
Not to insult Mr. Parker, because I was a fan of him in the show as well when I was growing up. He never had a good buddy named Mingo, who was an Indian. There was no Cincinnatus at Boonesboro. He had many other children besides Israel. Physically, Boone was only about 5'10" tall. A stocky man, reddish hair, blue eyes. Of course, that does not describe Fess Parker. Never a day in his life did he wear a coonskin cap. A lot of folks, their perception of Boone is from penny dreadfuls in the media and not from history, not from his kin, his companions, that accurately describes who and what he really was.
Drive to the Bell County Courthouse Square. You will take a right at the second light in Pineville and find convenient parking around the square.
Daniel Boone and the Long Hunters of the period had a complex relationship with Native Americans. During the Revolutionary War, when the Shawnees, Mingos, and other groups allied themselves with the British, Kentucky saw much warfare. The last battle in Kentucky was in 1782 at the Battle of the Blue Licks. Americans suffered a devastating defeat and a loss of 70 men, some of whom have Kentucky counties named in their honor. In 1778, Shawnee captured Boone while making salt on the Licking River. Boone was not treated as a prisoner. He was adopted as a son by Chief Blackfish. Boone lived over 5 months in Old Chillicothe. He had adopted brothers, sisters, and even took a ceremonial wife. Boone escaped, as most captured pioneers did. Chief Blackfish had a strong affection for Boone and named him Shaltoe, which in Shawnee meant Big Turtle. Let's listen to Chief Blackfish discuss Boone and the frontier as performed by Jeff Havert.
He was given the name Shotoi, Big Turtle, because he was much respected and honored among the Shawnee people. I am Blackfish. The whites come up from the Cumberland Gap. We come down from the river to chase them out, to tell them to go home. Won't work. Too many. Don't want to hurt them. But more come and more come. We cannot lose man for man like they can. We cannot replace them. That's why we take so many captives among them. We can take their children and bring them to our villages and raise them from the young. You can teach them and train them. The women, we can capture them and bring them back, and they will want to stay with us. But we bring very few men, unless this man, such as Boone, and they call him Kenton. We respect those men because we know how they are in the forest. We, as warriors, we pluck the hair out, wear scalp locks or war knots on the crown of our head. And on this, we make a braid and we attach our hair pieces. My hair piece is what is called hackle feathers. They are colored red and black, and I like them because if you look at them, they spread out and give you a good look. It makes me handsome. The jewelry we love to wear is silver. They say we are very vain people.
I ain't got no use for the little red rocking chair. Ain't got no sugar, honey, baby, now. Who rocked the cradle? And who will sing this song? Who's gonna rock that cradle when you're gone? I'm gonna rock that cradle when you're gone. And I ain't got no use for the little red rocking chair. Ain't got no sugar, honey, baby, now. Ain't got no sugar, honey, baby, now.
This song was recorded at the Cowan Creek Mountain Music School by Apple Shop. It's an old tune called Red Rocking Chair and is played on the predecessor of the banjo, an African Ngani.
Continue to the Bell County Courthouse Square. You will take a right at the second light in Pineville and find convenient parking. Map is inset on page 4. Resume audio as you turn at the light. Pause audio now.